Our topic for today is retreats. We're going to be talking about taking short retreats to refocus you and to get some perspective and to help you shape the way you're thinking about the next 6 to 12 months.
The thing about going a lot deeper, I'll give you an example. I got this off of James Altucher. He says he sits down every day and writes down 10 ideas, focus on one topic. I decided to start doing that. What I found that was interesting was that I'll write down 3 ideas or 4 ideas, and they're generally what I consider my best ideas, kind of easy to come up with. Then it starts to get harder. Generally, whenever I'm doing goal setting or even thinking of how to solve a problem, I'll do the same thing and then kind of stop at that point. The reason that I stop at that point is because I've written all my best ideas.
You've kind of picked all the low-hanging fruit.
Right. So then whatever's left can't be that good. In forcing myself to do this, I noticed that after a few ideas, then the stuff that I come up with, a couple more ideas aren't that great. So then there comes a point where I'm just stuck. I'm like, okay, I can't think of anything. That's it. So then I have to really think deeply about that topic and come up with the rest of the ideas. Interestingly enough, almost every time that I do that, one of those last few ideas, at least one of them, sometimes two, it's actually a really good idea. It's different. It's something that I normally wouldn't think of. It forces me to see the problem in a way that I normally don't see it.
So the depth really changes your perspective, and you have to sort through some of that middle material that's neither obvious nor deep in order to get to the deeper stuff.
I definitely had a lot of that during the retreat.
Welcome to the Zen Founder Podcast. I'm Rob, the founder.
And I'm Sherry, the clinical psychologist. And we've come together to help founders and their families stay sane while starting up.
Each week, we'll talk about different ways to work well, stay emotionally and physically healthy, and stay connected to the people that you care about.
I run a small SaaS company, software company. It's called BidSketch, and it's web proposal software for freelancers, consultants, and agencies.
Last year, you took your first planned retreat. Would you tell me a little bit about it, what you did, where you went?
I went to Idaho, Lake Coeur d'Alene. I took my notepad and pencil, went there with a couple of questions that I wanted to answer, a few goals that I wanted to set both for the business and personal side. And just sat down and thought through them, came away with some good goals, and took the time to think about some of the problems or obstacles that I've had in a different way, just because I was able to spend more time on it than I had in the past.
What were the questions that you asked yourself?
A couple of the questions that I was asking myself was, I think at the time we were planning on staying in Spokane, that's where I live now, until we adopted again. So we wanted to move to the Portland or Seattle. So one of the questions was, should we do that first or should we wait to adopt and then do that? But waiting to adopt would sort of delay that for a pretty long time. So that was one of the questions. The other one was a little bit more broad, just am I taking enough risks? Am I enough new things? And I kind of had those questions about risk and new things on the business side as well.
How was it different from previous experiences of goal planning?
This time around, I just got to spend a lot more time, go much deeper, and also thought about personal goals as well.
So it sounds like one of the things that you took away from that time was a different or a unique perspective on some of the questions that you had that you wouldn't have gotten to perhaps in a shorter amount of time.
Right. So that was a really big deal. The other part was just the questions about taking enough risk. During my normal goal planning session, I wouldn't have come up with those questions to try to answer, right? Because I'm focused more on business goals and what do I want to accomplish. I thought initially that 2 days was going to be too much time. Yeah, it was crazy. Once I started doing it, I found that 2 days was barely enough. Once I started going, I just had so much stuff to process and think through and so many different scenarios to go through that it was good that I took 2 days.
I think it does give you space to ask those existential questions about risk, both in your personal life and your professional life. Those are right. Big questions. They take more right. Time.
Yeah, absolutely.
So now that it's been about a year since that retreat, have you seen the effects of taking that time away? Have you seen that kind of filter through into your life over the last year?
I feel like there's been a lot more movement this year. Like I've done bigger stuff, taken bigger risks, made bigger changes. So I can definitely see the impact of that. So with like the moving question, I made that more of a priority. And even though we haven't done that yet, I've been working on that. And it's just been a longer process. We actually just got an offer accepted in a house. So finally happening.
Congratulations.
Thanks.
The priorities that you set on your retreat have taken shape in your life. You are acting on them. You're working on them.
On the business side, one of them was I had one employee at the time. Everyone else was a contractor. So one of the questions also was, what are the big obstacles? My biggest obstacles to accomplishing those goals. And one of them was speed of development, releasing features. For several reasons, working with contractors was starting to become more of a problem. But I'd held back hiring developers as employees and growing my team because of fear. During the retreat, I really thought that through. And I just came to realize that it's my team, I can build it how I want.
It doesn't have to be an obstacle.
Right. So I did that. About a month ago, made an offer to the second Rails developer. So another two. It's working out great.
So you're getting ready to do another retreat here in the next couple months. What kinds of questions are you going to ask this time?
So one of them has to do with the retreat or the goal planning itself. Doing more frequent sort of reviews, where I am, how everything is going, how I want that to take shape. There are a lot of new goals that I can set. Oh, I want to learn how to do these two or three new skills. I want to make sure I'm exercising all the time, meditating. I feel like I'm doing a lot already. So it's more about like picking the things that are most important to me, making sure that I'm doing that. And on the business side, thinking through what went wrong, what are the things that went right, and what changes I need to make to just grow more next year.
The first question that'll probably come across your mind as you listen to us talk about retreats is, why should I take one? Why should I take time away from my family, away from my work, and away from the other important things I'm doing to take a couple days and go somewhere and be alone and think? What's the importance of that? And for me and for the people, the startup founders who I've talked to who do this, it is an amazingly focusing time. It is a time that reshapes the way I think about the coming year. And it allows me to plan out what I'm going to be doing over the next year and be very certain about that plan and not feel like I'm bouncing around trying to make choices of what to do and what to fit in. And it also, perhaps most importantly, it shows me what I'm going to say no to over the next 12 months. It's anything that's not on my plan unless I reevaluate it. And so this retreat time is the time where I spend a lot of focused energy just thinking through things that I don't have time to think through the rest of the year.
I think retreats, they sound like a really simple thing. Like you're going to go away for a couple of days and we'll walk you through all of the things that we have learned about how to take a retreat and how to use that time really well. I can't overstate how important they've been in our lives, maybe most particularly in my life, in that it's a time to really think about not only your goals and plans for the coming year, but really the state of your life. So I think we want to make the distinction that retreats are not a timeout. This is not vacation. This is not stepping away from life to purely relax or just veg. Retreats are a time in. They're a very focused time to do some internal reflection and to step more deeply into the direction of your life and your business than you have time to do in your normal day-to-day life.
You use the term time in for that, you know, meaning it's time where you are in your work and you become immersed in it. I think that's a good distinction for folks to think about in that this really is more work time than vacation. So let's give a little bit of structure to this. If you're listening, you're probably thinking, how long should a retreat be? How should I structure it? Where should I go? What should I do to prepare? And that's the kind of stuff we're going to talk about today. We actually have it broken down into each of those areas. I want to kick us off by talking about the duration or the length of a retreat. Obviously, you could take a retreat for any length of time. And so the most effective duration that we found is 48 hours. And it's basically to take 2 days, and that gives you 2 nights to get a lot of sleep and 2 days to really think about this stuff. And when you go on a retreat, it should be alone, totally solo, no family, no kids, no friends. You need to feel like you have plenty of time to make the retreat successful. the optimal duration that we found is 48 hours. It's a two-day retreat. Obviously, you could go longer, but that allows you ample time to feel like you have enough time to really dive into this stuff. Anytime you get distracted, if you go back and check email, or if you get in a conversation with someone about something else, it pulls you out of that retreat and you have to get back into it. You have to get back into the thinking process and the mindset. You just don't want someone else around to distract or to drive the agenda. You need to be completely in charge of where you are, what you're thinking about. To be honest, just being silent is kind of the focus of it. So bringing other people with you is not, you know, not something that's going to benefit that.
And 24 hours is just too short, because most retreats begin with this debriefing period, or a time when you're just stepping away from the rhythm of your life and the energy with which you normally approach your day. And you may need to spend a few hours just sitting in silence or walking around, not really thinking about anything, not really doing the retreat yet, just relaxing, just cleansing from the busyness of your day-to-day life. Usually when I go on retreats, I sleep for like 12 hours the first night and just allow time to do whatever you feel like doing, so long as it's about rest and restoration and clearing your mind. It's a good time to practice some mindfulness or some meditation. When I do retreats, I drive 2.5 hours over to the coast. During that drive, that's a drive that is usually done in silence. So no music or podcasts or audiobooks. And it's a really interesting thought experiment to just notice what thoughts are coming into my mind during that amount of time and kind of keep track of the things that I'm worried about or are pulling my mind in specific directions. Not necessarily follow those thought paths down where they want to take me, but just noticing what's preoccupying me. That exercise alone gives me some really good information into what I'm worried about and what I may need to spend some time really thinking through in a more focused way during the retreat.
Yeah, I do something similar because I'm Captain Audiobook or Podcast. I always have an earbud in my ear and I'm listening to stuff. But when I do the drive, because I also go to the coast, pretty much in silence, and I have my Moleskine notebook next to me, and I know that's totally dangerous and I shouldn't be doing that while I'm driving, but I do try to hash out what are the big questions that I'm going to be asking. I think we'll get into this a little more, a couple sections is like the structure, right? What questions to ask and how to think about them and that kind of stuff. But this is that preparation step of starting to enter this mindset of like, I am going to be totally silent. I'm not going to talk. I'm not going to listen to music. I'm not going to listen to anything else. And I'm going to let my mind think about work, essentially, and personal life. Don't get me wrong. This part's actually fun because you're just coming up with things. A retreat is, I'll say it's hard work. Like, you have to be focused and you have to allow yourself time to sit there and be silent and allow your thoughts to fill the space.
It's a really different mental discipline. You know, most of us are really used to multitasking. You know, we've got multiple things going on and we're constantly interrupted. And so many people play it pretty fast in terms of what they're responding to with their brains. So the practice of slowing down and being quiet and being focused is very effortful. It takes a lot of energy, but it's a very different energy than most of us are using in our on a regular basis.
Yeah. And I think I would say, don't be worried if you go on a retreat, if you spend 3 hours just trying to decompress and with no progress, because that takes this time to kind of pull away from the day-to-day. At one point, I found myself in a coffee shop just staring at my Moleskine notebook for hours, and I kind of started feeling like I was judging myself, you know, of like, well, I'm not getting anything done. But that is the start of it. You know, if you do that for the whole 48 hours, it's not productive. But if you do that for 4, 5, 6 hours, you are entering into that thought process that's going to get the good work done. And so I love being in a coffee shop, sipping chai, thinking, watching people, and you're really just trying to get that day-to-day stuff out of your head.
I think it's important to choose a location that facilitates that kind of process. So you and I both go to the coast because it's an area that we love, that we're familiar with. It's relaxing. There's something to look at. There's places to walk without it being too stimulating. I think it would be really hard to do a retreat in downtown San Francisco or New York, yeah, unless you were kind of cloistered away in a monastery or a hotel and you weren't really out experiencing a lot of stimulation. And so it's important to choose a location that does facilitate rest for you?
Yeah, I think the three ideals are beach, forest, or desert. And it's up to you. You know, which of those three really resonates with you?
For people on a budget, particularly many Catholic churches have monasteries where they, you know, they host people who are doing retreats. And usually it's very simple accommodations, but they're usually very affordable and work perfectly well for this kind of arrangement. And there's some beautiful ones, like there's one in Big Sur. So you don't necessarily have to go to a fancy hotel or rent a house or something. There are ways to do this very, very affordably.
I think the key here is to get out of town, get away from your house, get away from town. You don't want to run into people you know. The other thing is there's kind of this a thing that you and I have adopted, which is to try to be screen free if possible. So I do bring my iPad, but I do not bring my laptop. And so I will bring an iPad with a little keyboard that attaches to it if I want to take some notes. But realistically, I bring this Moleskine notebook, and it's the, you know, it's one of the little ones, little with the black cover, and I bring a nice pen, and that's where I take my notes. The iPad is purely just a backup, and maybe if I wanted to check some email if I really, really needed to, but I would actually encourage you not to.
I think that's a little thing that is really important. The further you get away from your normal day-to-day work process, the more your mind is free to wander and is able to break out of the typical patterns that you think in. So Rob uses his notebook, which is a place for creative thought. I actually bring a big roll of butcher paper and a bunch of pens, and I roll it out on the floor of wherever I'm working and work in this very non-linear, colorful, kind of random way. But it does allow me to get my thoughts down in a way where I'm not bound by the structure of a screen and a three-point outline. It's very non-linear, but that works for me when I'm doing this kind of thinking.
Right, and mine winds up being a little more linear. It's black ink on white paper in a notebook, you know, and it's bullet points. And then I will do some brainstorming typically and take some notes for a couple pages. Then I will have this summary page at the end that is kind of my, and I'll put at the top, like, my takeaways, retreat 2014. And I'm trying to get to some things that I'm willing to commit to. You know, that's really my goal. I'm a fairly goal-oriented person in general. And so I'm thinking, like, what are the three or four statements that I am going to go all out for this year and that I'm going to say no to other opportunities in order to do these things? And I typically try to have, let's say, between three and five professional things. And then I'll often have one or two personal things that I want to improve in my life over the next year.
You're looking at the future and working backwards. You're looking at your goals and figuring out what you need to do in order to reach them over the next year or a certain time frame. My retreats are a little bit more back to front. When I began to do them, I particularly viewed them as a general check-in about the status of my life. So I use very simple questions where I look back over the year and simply ask, what have I loved? What has been life-giving? What are my high points? And then I ask, what sucked? What did I not like this year? What took life from me? I use that data to look forward. So looking at the really sweet spots in my life and asking, how can I step further into that this year? Or how can I do more of that? How can I grow in that area? And then looking at the parts of my life that I didn't like and asking, can I eliminate this part of life? And if I can't, is there a way that I can make it better or a way that I can feel differently about it?
Yeah, and I'm actually looking through my notebook now, and I have some things from my retreat at the end of 2012. At the top of the page says, looking ahead to 2013, and then I have a couple personal goals. Run 2 times a week, take some vocal lessons, you know, that's kind of personal improvement. And then have at least one experience per day that the kids will remember, one memorable experience per day with each of my kids. And then professional goals. I have some very specific things like launch 3 video courses, and I have some months mapped out. I say 2.5x Hittail, which is one of my apps. And I spent a lot of time thinking about how I was going to accomplish those, how much time they would take, if they are reasonable. I didn't just throw out 2.5x. I looked at the current revenue. I literally mapped it forward and thought, what is an ambitious but achievable goal for that? Those are the kind of things that I take away. And I typically make at least one substantial change to the way I work right when I return. It's typically the implementation of like a new to-do system, or figuring out how to outsource email, or how to spend less time on email, or it's a refocusing of like, okay, if I'm going to get hit, tail, or drip to this specific place by, you know, the end of the year, what are the steps to get there? And I start mapping those out. And when I return, I just start implementing. And it's a big, for me, it's a big motivator to know where I'm headed and what are the most important things for the whole year. You know, it's a short list, but if you don't do this, I know for me, I find that I wander during the year and I don't know what to say yes to. I don't know what to say no to. I don't know where to spend my energy. And that's what this retreat brings me away, is this list of like, these are my non-negotiables for the next 12 months.
And I usually choose a theme for the year, as cheesy as that sounds. But I did one retreat where I looked back at all the high and low points of my year. And I realized that consistently my low point was feeling frustrated or angry. Can you tell I have small children? And I really wanted to change that. And so my theme this last year has been calm. And I have been very committed to my yoga practice and exercise and things that help me become more calm. And so that's what I'm working on. That's who I'm becoming this year. And there have been other years where I've chosen a different theme and it's just totally shaped my priorities for the year. If you really take retreats seriously and figure out how to do them well for you, for who you are, it is a decision point. It should be a time when you really honor what you've done as you've stepped away from your normal life and really thought about what you're needing and what you're wanting and where you want to go and how you want to live, and then to seriously make decisions based on that information. I was working as a tenure track professor and then went on a retreat. And as I looked at the things that were not working well for me in my life, I realized that many of them had to do with the function of that job, faculty meetings and grading and things that were part of the job, but I just didn't like it. It took a couple months, but I resigned from that job and changed the focus of my career based on the retreat. And it was the best decision I could have made to really listen to what was working well and what wasn't, and then acting on it.
Yeah. And a couple years ago for me, I made the decision to acquire Hittail or acquire an app. And I said, I'm going to acquire an app in the next year. I made a very big decision about starting to build a new app, which became Drip, at a retreat. And I said, I'm going to commit to this. I know it's a big time investment, but here's how I'm mapping my year out. And I give a lot of thought to it. I've every year also made the decision not to write another book. And I always mull it over. It's always on the list. And each year I make a very deliberate decision not to do it, even though I really want to, but I don't have the time. But you know what that does? It makes me feel okay about not doing it. I don't have this big list of things that I unrealistically think I should be doing and then spend the whole year saying, oh, I really should be writing this book. I really should be writing this book. I actually intentionally exclude it from the list of things that I have to do. It's on my honorable mentions list, or my boy, if I have time, you know, I'll do it. Those are the kind of really career-altering decisions I've made as well. And I think you can go into the retreat. Like, sometimes you know that you have a big decision to make. Like, should I sell my app? You know, you're thinking about selling something, or should I acquire something? Or should I take on a partner? Should I take on an investment? If those things are already on your mind, these are good questions to mull over. Even if you don't have any of those big turning points or those big decision points to make, you know, if you take that first 3-4 hours and just be quiet and let your mind speak, these types of questions will come up and it will become clear what types of things you need to be thinking about over the next 48 hours. And something you said earlier that I think is really important is you said to take this seriously and to make decisions based on what you find. I take it so seriously. It shapes my entire next 12 months. I don't just make decisions. Like, I base my schedule and my goals and everything on these retreats. And I realize that sounds like a lot of pressure, and it sounds like you might get out there and crack under the pressure, you know, and not be able to define that whole year. Can I really commit to these things that I'm putting on this list? But it's never been an issue. And if you set out to actually commit to the things that you're putting forth in this retreat, it'll be worth it. Everyone who we've talked to, all the founders who have done retreats that we've spoken with, not one of them has said they regretted it. And in fact, some people that I talked to were saying, yeah, I'd like to do it twice a year.
It's amazing how much clarity you find when you focus. So even though it feels like a lot of pressure, I'm going to decide my whole life this weekend. It's amazing how actually easy it is to do that and be pretty wise and pretty spot on about your decision making because you are so focused.
Yeah, I agree. I've been surprised. It's weird to think that you can look out 12 months and be fairly accurate or have at least have a realistic depiction of what you can and can't get done. But it seems to happen every year for me.
One of the things that I have done is keep track of my notes from year to year. So I make my big crazy looking butcher paper of ideas and thoughts. And I take a picture of it, but then after I leave my retreat, I'll put that into a Google spreadsheet. And so I can see from year to year the kinds of things that I was thinking about, the kinds of things that I found life-giving or draining. And then I can sort of track my goals over time and see how I'm doing year by year. And that's really interesting too, to have like 5 years of retreat data to look at about your life and realize, okay, I'm still thinking about that problem. But also to see the amazing changes that can happen when you take yourself seriously, take seriously how you feel about what's happening in your life.
I do the same thing. You know, I have them all in a couple of different notebooks, and I will go back and peruse them. I also talk about them. We have a goals episode in my other podcast, Startups for the Rest of Us, and we do that towards the end of the year. And I'm able to talk about them publicly. And then we revisit the previous year's goals in these goals episodes to see, you know, how well did we live up to that and stuff that came out of the retreat. So, So I guess to kind of wrap us up, this is something that's worth a try, even if you're skeptical. You know, if you've listened to this and you think this is probably going to be a waste of time, I challenge you to take 48 hours and try it just once. Listen to this podcast right before you do it and try to sketch out some ideas and some questions and give it that 48 hours of silence and being away from email and being away from your day-to-day life. My guess is that you will start making it an annual event.
If you'd like to go a little deeper with this topic, we've put together a brief article and a worksheet to help you think through your own retreat. And that is available to those who sign up for our mailing list at zenfounder.com/retreat.
And if this 20-minute podcast doesn't feel like a sufficient starting point, get in touch with us and we'll walk you through it a little bit more.
You can email us at questions@zenfounder.com. Thanks for listening to this episode of Zen Founder.
We'll be back next week with another conversation about how to enjoy a little bit more Zen in your startup life.